Welcome to Ticking Each Other Off, with your hosts, Logan and Brent, a podcast about watches, horology, and anything else the boys get to talking about. So sit back, relax, and let our audio waves tenderly massage your eardrums.
Hello, welcome back to Ticking Each Other Off. I'm your host, Logan.
And I'm Brent.
And this week we're talking about dive watches. So we're going to talk a little bit of the history of dive watches. Brent actually did the research for this episode, so he's going to be quizzing me on my knowledge of dive watch history, which is pretty good if I do say so myself, but I guess we'll find out for sure. And some of the important models in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Like I said, he did all the research for this one, so I guess I'll let him talk about it.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess we'll start off the podcast here by defining for our viewers what a dive watch is, I guess. So we'll get into the definition of a dive watch, and then we'll talk about the history of dive watches, which is kind of the meat of what we're going to get into. And then after that, we'll talk a little bit about basically common features on dive watches and what makes them different from any other watch, basically.
Cool.
So yeah, we're gonna basically skim the surface of dive watches today. Starting out with the definition, a dive watch is kind of what it sounds like. It's a watch used for underwater activities. And especially nowadays, what we know as a dive watch is something that's suitable for scuba diving. Which is kind of where the name comes from. And so there's an organization called the ISO, which is the International Organization for Standardization. And they basically set the standards for dive watches and the standard that a company has to meet for them to be able to call their watch a dive watch. And basically it is a certain pressure rating, which translates to a depth underwater. Logan, do you know what that pressure rating is? Or take a guess.
So it's a rating that qualifies a watch as an official ISO certified dive watch.
Is that exactly.
Okay. In feet or meters, or no, it's in bars.
Yeah. So the pressure is measured. I guess standard unit of pressure is atmospheres or ATM.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is basically, it's usually like 1/10 the depth in meters.
Okay. Can you give me four options?
Sure. Okay. So I'll just do it in meters in terms of depth, because that's kind of what we see most commonly.
Okay.
So 50 meters, 100 meters, or 200 meters.
50, 100, or 200. So it's never the last one. I'm going to say 100. 50 seems kind of low.
Yep, it is 100.
Boom.
Nice. Question one is right.
Off to a good start. I'm going to start keeping track of how many of these I got right.
Okay. Yeah. So basically the minimum depth rating for a watch to be considered a dive watch is 100 meters. Or I guess for our US viewers, that would be 330 feet in terms of feet. And then, as I said before, the kind of the standard unit of measurement that they use is atmospheres, which is atmospheric pressure, basically. So it's 10 atmospheres would be 100 meters.
Okay.
So it's kind of an interesting
cool
little fact there, I guess. So I guess now we'll get into a little bit of history, if you're ready.
I'm so ready, man.
Okay, let's do it. So kind of early development of dive watches, or I mean, at that point, they were basically just waterproof watches.
Mm-hmm.
So early development kind of really began in the 19th century. And it kind of started with pocket watches. And you had like hard hat divers, which were people who would dive with like, you know, like you see like the hard, like the big helmets and stuff like that. The
steampunk stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of the steampunk stuff. So they actually had like custom built pocket watches that were relatively waterproof, and they would put them in their helmets, like, so they could pull them out and like keep track of how long they'd been under there.
That's so steampunk, man.
Yeah, I know. It really is. Pocket watches and dive helmets. So yeah, the idea or like the need for dive watches or waterproof watches started in the 19th century. We really didn't see, obviously, wristwatches or waterproof wristwatches until the 20th century, early 1900s. So the first real like patented waterproof watch was invented in 1926 or patented in 1926. And Logan, do you want to take a guess as to what it was?
Okay. What it was or the brand?
Yeah, I guess the brand. We'll start with the brand.
Can I have options?
Sure.
Because I have a clue, but yeah. If it's in the options, I'll know for sure.
Okay. So we'll go with Panerai, Hamilton, or Rolex.
So this is just the first waterproof watch.
Yep, the first like patented waterproof watch.
Wristwatch. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think Rolex, the Oyster, right?
Yep, that's correct. And woo! That's actually kind of interesting. Yep, another one. It's actually kind of interesting. The Oyster is a word that we see on pretty much every Rolex today. Every Rolex says Oyster Perpetual. So perpetual obviously means automatic. It perpetually gets wound and runs based on you wearing it. And then the Oyster denotes that it's waterproof. So Oyster technology, I guess you could say, was invented or patented in 1926 on the Rolex Oyster. And a lady named Mercedes Gleitz crossed the English Channel, and she wore a Rolex Oyster. Funny enough, she did not wear it as a wristwatch. She wore it as tied around her neck with a ribbon. So it was like tied around her neck. It took her 10 hours to cross the English Channel. And at the end of the swim, the watch was still ticking and was perfectly sealed. No water had gotten in.
Nice.
So yeah, a little bit of background, I guess, on the first real waterproof watch.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, and then our second innovation, I guess. So the Rolex Oyster was definitely a watch you could buy, but it was more of an early development kind of prototype. Mm-hmm. The first mass-produced watch or a waterproof watch for commercial distribution was invented in 1932.
Okay.
Do you want to take a guess at this one? This one's a little bit more obscure.
Well, if Rolex did the first one, something tells me Omega did the second one, but I don't know what model it would be because I don't think they had the Seamaster in the 30s. No, I know for a fact they didn't.
Right. Yeah. So it was Omega.
Yes.
I guess you could consider them Rolex's rival kind of from the beginning. Omega had the watch, a watch called the Marine. And it's kind of really, I find this watch kind of interesting because it was a rectangular watch.
Huh.
And for being the first commercially distributed dive watch, for that being a rectangular watch, it's just kind of weird because you never see rectangular dive watches anymore. They're always dress watches.
Right. When you think of rectangular watch, you think of wearing it with like a suit, not a scuba suit.
Right. It's not really a dive watch style, I guess.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. So this watch was kind of cool. It had like an inner case. Like you could take the watch out of the case and the outer case was like separate and it came apart.
Oh, what?
So think of it as like an OtterBox for your watch back in the 30s.
Kind of like the Speedmaster Alaska project.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly like that. It had like an outer case and the outer case was like attached to the strap like the watch was.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could pull it apart and the inner watch was like in there in its own case.
That's kind of cool. So you can use it as like a dress watch with its rectangular design and then pop on your big boy case and swim with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So kind of a cool watch.
Weird.
For sure.
Wonder how much one of those is if you wanted to pick it up secondhand.
Yeah, I bet they're pretty valuable now. So next point. So, and then another, I guess, kind of another development. 1935, the Italian Navy commissioned a watch called the Radio Mir, which just ended up being the name of the model. And the reason this is kind of significant is because dive watches in their early days, instead of being commercially used, I mean, the Omega Marine was a commercially distributed watch, but a lot of them were commissioned for military use because of the grime and the wet conditions that soldiers had to deal with on a day-to-day basis. They had to have watches that were durable and watertight, basically. So the Radio Mir was a watch invented in 1935 and commissioned for the Italian Navy. And Logan, do you have a guess on the brand?
Yeah, it's Panerai, man. They still make it.
Yeah. There you go. So yes, that was Panerai's watch. And it kind of featured a design very similar to what we see today. With kind of the very unique case shape and the crown guard. So it was a really cool watch. Fun fact, that watch was, so it was a Panerai watch, but Rolex actually built the watch for Panerai, which is kind of interesting.
Right. You can see the Rolex coronet on the crowns of the early ones.
Yep. Yeah.
And they have Rolex movements too.
Yeah, exactly. So it was basically a Panerai branded Rolex, just kind of cool. So yeah, Rolex was kind of ahead of the game at that point. So yeah, there we go. You're 3 for 3. This is awesome. Or however many we've done so far.
Killing it.
Yeah.
What do I get if I win? If I get all of them right?
Oh, gosh.
The queen sweep.
What do you get?
Do we get a Submariner?
Yes.
Can you buy me a Submariner?
You get a Submariner. I'll buy you a Submariner. A brand new one.
Can I choose a reference? Any reference I want?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you can choose a reference.
All right, 6538.
Done. I can do that. Yes, you heard it right. If he wins this, if he gets all the questions right, I will buy him a 6.53.
You better ask me a really hard one. You're going to really regret that.
All right. So, moving on. So like I said, a lot of the dive watches were commissioned for military use around that time. So Hamilton, Elgin, and Walton were all making dive watches, or waterproof watches, I guess, for military use during World War II. And then after the war, we have in 1953, really this is a big leap because this is the first real dive watch that was pressure tested and not just quote unquote waterproof. Mm-hmm. So it was able to go like really under the surface diving.
Okay.
And this watch, 1953, Logan, you have a guess on this one?
53. I know this first Submariner was, I think, 58. So it's not a Submariner.
Not a Submariner.
I don't think it's a Seamaster either. I think it's a Blancpain, right?
Yep.
Jacques Cousteau.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Sick.
There you go.
On my way to a 6.538, man.
So it was a Blancpain 50 fathoms, which is a really well-known watch today for some of its other like homage iterations, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So Jacques Cousteau wore that watch, and it was featured in a magazine. It was a big I guess brand and design in France at the time. So this was significant not only because it was the first real dive watch that could go under the surface, but it was also popularized as fashionable, I guess, which dive watches weren't really fashionable before this.
Okay. So they're more like a concept thing, and now that they're...
Yeah, they were more like a tool than, and kind of were not in the fashion arena, I guess.
Okay, so is this maybe when like tool watches became fashionable?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool.
And it's the first real dive watch too, so it's kind of ticking a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
So then... in 1954, so shortly after the Blancpain, which came at a good time because 1954, scuba diving was invented, which obviously scuba diving is more popular now. We all know what scuba diving is. Do you know what scuba diving stands for? This will be a fun fact kind of thing.
Oh, God. Here goes my Submariner. I have no clue.
Okay. Okay, then I don't have to buy you a 6.538, so that's good.
It stands for South Carolina Underwater Bathymetry Alteration.
All right, you got one letter right.
Which one?
U is underwater.
Oh, man, good guess.
So it is, basically, it's kind of what it sounds like. It is self-contained underwater breathing apparatus.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense than what I said.
Yeah. So that is what scuba stands for. Fun fact, beyond, I guess, the watch stuff.
There goes my Submariner.
Yeah. Oh, well. It's not a big loss.
Will you still give me like a 55-13 at least?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, thanks, man.
You're welcome. Where were we? Scuba diving. So obviously with scuba diving, divers were able to go a lot deeper than just, you know, surface diving. So depth and pressure became relevant at that point. So then we started looking at, you know, people started pressure testing watches, and watches started to get depth ratings, mm-hmm. Which we see on a lot of dive watches. And honestly, like some non-dive watches have depth ratings now.
Yeah.
So shortly after, also in 1954, what we know, I guess, as the Submariner was kind of invented.
Yeah.
And this was kind of before it was dubbed the Submariner.
Right.
So it was basically early development models of the Submariner, invented in 54. And there were a couple other dive watches that went along with it. So at that point, we've got, you know, four or five actual dive watches that are around. And so the main two are still the Submariner and the Blancpain 50 Fathoms. Mm-hmm. So then we start seeing people actually dive with these watches. And we'll get into the functionality of dive watches a little bit later. Moving on from, I guess those are like the first real dive watches. Then we've got, we'll take a deeper dive into some of the more hardcore stuff. Yes, deeper dive. So starting with some of the hardcore stuff, we see kind of an outbreak of some more serious dive watches in the late 60s, starting in 1967 with, do you have a guess on this one?
What was the year?
1967.
67. Mm-hmm. I want to say the Sea Dweller was the first serious one.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, another one. The Sea Dweller was like the first serious, really deep dive watch. Not that the Submariner and the 50 Fathoms were not. Going back to those two, they were rated around, and again, depth ratings were just coming of age at that point. The original Submariner and the 50 Fathoms were rated around 100 meters, which is pretty good. Mm-hmm. So a little over 10 years later, with the Sea Dweller, the Sea Dweller was actually rated at 600 meters, which is a huge jump. So that's almost six times the depth rating of the original Submariner and the Blancpain.
That's crazy.
Yeah, 600 meters. So it's pretty wild. I mean, for the 60s, that's kind of insane.
Yeah, for real.
And we'll get into like depth in a little bit and just kind of how ridiculous that is. But moving on.
Do people even go that deep at that point?
No, definitely not. Yeah, well, it's kind of crazy. So we'll go up through kind of the modern stuff, I guess, to go through how ridiculous like depth ratings have gotten. And then we'll talk about how deep people actually dive.
Okay.
To put it in perspective. The next one to come out, which again, right on Rolex's tail in 1971 and 72, I guess, was, I think you know this one.
Yeah, well, if it was right on Rolex's tail, it's got to be Omega. And if we're talking deep sea, it's got to be a Ploprof.
Yep. Yeah, so the Ploprof, which is still a watch they make today, mm-hmm. Was originally rated at 600 meters, just like the Sea Dweller.
Got him.
And then 1 year later, they improved the depth rating from 600 meters to 1,000 meters.
Oh, my God.
In 1972. Which is crazy.
And Rolex crapped themselves.
Yeah, they were like, "Oh boy, we gotta catch up." I guess as time went on, you know, through the 70s, 80s, 90s, depth ratings increased, and you have kind of like the big players. You have the Seamaster come out, which the Seamaster came out obviously before the 70s, but really turned into a dive watch a little bit later, like a serious dive watch. Mm-hmm. And then I guess some other significant points. I guess these are more recent. Would be, so you have the Sea Dweller, and then a more serious iteration of that was the Deep Sea.
Yep.
Which is still a Sea Dweller.
Yep.
So the Sea Dweller was rated at 600 meters, a depth of 600 meters. Do you have a guess as to the depth rating for the Deep Sea?
So we're talking about like the prototype model with a really big crystal?
No, this one. So this one is like the commercially...
Oh,
any, you can kind of go out and buy this one. It's just like a more hardcore Sea Dweller.
Oh, the one that came out like 10 years ago?
Yeah.
or 20 years ago, whenever. Okay. I know it's really high. It's got to be higher than 1,000. Mm-hmm. I don't think it can be that much higher. 18,000?
18.
I mean, 1,800?
That's kind of close. It's 3,900 meters, actually.
3,900 meters? Holy crap.
Yeah. For a commercially sold watch, you can get a commercially sold watch rated to 3,900 meters.
Does the ocean go that deep?
Yeah, no. Well, yeah, we'll get into that. No one has, like, dove that deep before, which is crazy. So, yeah, you should have no worries about washing your hands or taking a shower with that one. You definitely don't have to worry about water getting in.
Yeah, if you've got a foggy crystal on your deep sea, you might have gotten a fake.
Yeah, you might have gotten ripped off there. Yeah, so that is, like, the deep sea is kind of known as, like, one of the most hardcore commercially distributed production watches, I guess you could say, that anyone can kind of go out and buy one. And of course, the Blowproof is still around too, which is another crazy dive watch that's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
So the Deep Sea, and then an even further iteration or evolution of the Deep Sea is the Deep Sea Challenge, which was kind of a one-off, like, special watch that was used in the Deep Sea Challenge, which was an expedition in a submarine back in 2012 to try to dive as deep as possible, I guess. So do you have an idea or a guess for the depth rating on the Deep Sea Challenge watch?
Well, it's got to be higher than 3950.
Yeah.
I don't know, 5,000?
Actually, the Deep Sea Challenge is rated to 12,000 meters.
What?
Which is just insane.
Jeez.
So, yeah. So, you've seen, okay, so watches, dive watches kind of started at 100 meters. And now we've got dive watches that can go to 12,000 meters. I mean, even in the 60s, we already have watches that could hit 600 meters. So, just to put this in perspective, the deepest scuba dive ever recorded, which was sometime in the 2000s, I can't remember when. So, it's relatively recent. The deepest scuba dive is only 332 meters.
Oh my god.
So, I mean, that's deep. But when you put it in perspective, that kind of shows you how deep. Okay, back in the 60s, that watch could have gone 600 meters, the Sea Dweller or the
Polar. Twice as deep as anybody's ever gone since then.
Right. And that's, yeah, no one even went that deep,
yeah,
you know, within 40 years of the Sea Dweller being invented. No one even got to 300 meters. So that's the deepest anyone's ever dove. So needless to say, I mean, pretty much any dive watch, you're going to be fine, you know, going snorkeling or scuba diving.
Yeah.
So you don't really have to worry about it unless you're trying to break a record. Then I guess at least make sure you can have a watch that goes 300 meters, which, you know, a lot of them do now. Yeah. So just a little bit more perspective, I guess. Kind of a cool fact was that So the Deep Sea Challenge, which we talked about a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Was a submarine dive. So in that case, you wouldn't even need a dive watch, right, for your wrist because you're in a submarine.
Right.
But the submarine in the Deep Sea Challenge went to 10,898 meters.
Oh my god.
Which is still 1,000 meters. 1,000 meters shy of the depth rating for the Deep Sea
Challenge.
They
came up on it, though.
And it's not even...
They came up on that limit.
Yeah, they did come up on the limit, but you're in a submarine. I mean, you'd never, ever come close to needing that as a diver, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
They did, I guess they strapped the watch to the outside of the submarine, though.
Yeah, I think James Cameron wore one, too, on the inside. Not like he needed to. He could have worn a freaking Casio.
Right, he could have worn anything. But yeah, and the watch survived, I guess. But fun fact, so that was in 2012. The actual record for the deepest dive in a submarine was actually set in 1960, which is absolutely insane. And it was slightly, only a few more meters than the Deep Sea Challenge. It was 10,916 meters. And it was set by Jacques Piccard in a submarine in 1960.
Okay.
Which is crazy. So that's kind of insane that we haven't even broken the record from 1960. But I guess at the end of the day...
Was there a Rolex on that one too?
I don't think so. I don't think that one was even watch related.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they just did a dive in a submarine. But I mean, that just puts it in perspective. Like the watches we have now and the technology we have now for dive watches is far beyond what we're even capable of doing.
Yeah.
In terms of scuba diving. So it's kind of cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
A little bit of overkill.
A little overkill. So I guess, and then we'll get into, last but not least, we'll get into some of the features on dive watches in general. So what makes them different from regular watches?
Okay.
Some of the things that, yeah, are unique. So I guess, and you can jump in here with this kind of stuff. I guess there's not really any trivia with this kind of stuff. But I guess one of the first things we'll talk about is bracelets and straps, which isn't really specific to the watch, but...
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen all sorts of like bracelet variations and straps come out for dive watches. Obviously stainless steel,
yep.
Is popular in dive watches, and the real innovation there was the clasp. So you had a clasp that was adjustable and expandable. So a lot of, dive watch clasps will have like, a dive suit expansion, and it's just like a little extra clasp almost inside of the regular clasp that pops out. So it can fit around your wetsuit or your dive suit.
Yeah, and like the new Tudor Pelagos, actually, the clasp just expands.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it has like a spring-activated mechanism in there, which like also works when you're wearing the watch normally. And if you like move your wrists in a way to where it would normally be restricted by the steel band, it'll just stretch a little bit and then come back to normal.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, so... And the reason for that, you know, the reason that the watch has to fit over the wetsuit or the dive suit is because the wetsuit or dive suit is sealed with whatever gloves they're using. Obviously, the water is really cold, but also it's for pressure reasons. And so usually when you're diving, a dive watch will sit over the glove or the wetsuit.
Hmm.
Which kind of brings us to, so silicone or... rubber.
Yeah, rubber straps.
Those are obviously really popular with like Casios and Seikos. So they're good for diving because they're a stretchy, flexible material.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to corrode, obviously. And they're just really durable and, you know, good underwater.
Yeah, they look great.
Yeah, they look cool too. They look really utilitarian, I guess.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, everybody's favorite, the NATO strap.
Leather straps.
Oh. Yeah, leather is not great for diving.
You don't wear leather diving?
Not really. Unless you want to ruin your leather, then.
No, I only wear like fine ostrich.
Fine. I only wear glossy coated alligator straps when I dive.
Yeah, I only wear my $200 Hodinkee leather strap.
I usually wear a suede strap when I dive.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah, I can see why you'd want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, suede is really good for diving, actually. No, don't listen to us. no. So, yeah, NATO straps, which have become really popular just to wear out and about, are really good for diving because, I mean, again, nylon, like rubber, it doesn't corrode. It's not really affected by water. Mm-hmm. It dries out easily. But obviously, like when you put a NATO strap on, and usually you have all this extra nylon at the end, and you kind of loop it, you loop it up at the end of the at the top there.
Yeah,
that's kind of the extra nylon. So the point of that is, you know, when you put it on over a wetsuit, it's got slack, so you can obviously put it around something larger than your wrist.
Yeah.
So it's the same idea, just executed differently on a NATO strap. So that's kind of what they're for, which is kind of cool. They actually do have some sort of function besides style.
Yeah.
Yeah. So next thing. So that's bracelets and straps. Another thing that makes dive watches unique are the crystals. And again, the crystals, like the glass that goes over the dial, which is a big part of the watch, obviously. It's how we're able to see the dial. But in theory, it's also one of the most vulnerable parts of the watch.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to make it sturdy enough for diving, they use mostly dome crystals, which is a lot of what we see on vintage watches, but they still use dome crystals for a lot of dive watches now.
Hmm.
And I guess that shape, the shape of the dome crystal and the variation in thickness is the best design for dealing with pressure. And so obviously in the early days, they were made out of like acrylic. It was an acrylic crystal.
Yeah.
And now we've got like synthetic sapphire for dome crystals. So yeah, crystals, that big bubble dome shape is kind of a unique thing that stands out on dive watches. And that's kind of, it's actually functional again.
That's cool. Yeah, I didn't know that was like on purpose, but obviously I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, it look. I mean, it does look more divey. It almost looks kind of, you know, if on a really domed crystal, it looks kind of steampunk, like really bubbly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's actually the design, the shape is made to deal with more pressure.
That's funny. That's like one of the features that first drew me to vintage watches was like the way that the light reflected off dome crystals. I thought it was so cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. And a lot of vintage watches that aren't dive watches have dome crystals, which is cool. I mean, almost all of them do.
Yeah. Scratches easily though.
Yes. Yeah. The acrylic does scratch pretty easily, which is kind of cool. And then
the bezel.
Yeah. The bezel is another one that's obviously really big. It's a huge design feature, but that's also functional. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I usually use it to like time how long I need to cook my eggs for, but I don't think that's why it's there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people actually do call it like an egg timer.
Really?
It's kind of funny. Yeah. Like I've heard people call it like an egg timer bezel, which is pretty funny.
That's funny.
Yeah. But basically, I mean, it's a bezel and going around, it's, you have a little triangle or like a center marker at the top, basically. And then if you go clockwise, you have basically a 5 mark, a 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, et cetera, until you get to 60. So in its like upright position with the triangle aligned with the top of the dial, it just looks like it's marking the dial as like your minutes
right
on the dial. But the bezel on a dive watch is actually rotatable. So I wish we could, you know, visually portray this, but what you do, so back in the early days of diving, they didn't really measure depth. They kind of measured depth in terms of minutes, actually. So you would say, oh, I'm going on a 35-minute dive or whatever. And it meant you were going to dive for 35 minutes to reach a certain depth. So what divers would do, and this was especially a military thing, is you take whatever, however long you want to dive, right? So let's say it's a 35-minute dive.
Yeah.
Okay, then you do 60 minus 35 is 25. So you set wherever the minute hand is, you set the 25 marker on the bezel to where the minute hand is. And then like when you're going down, when you're going to dive. Mm-hmm. And then at that point you have 35 minutes. And then when the minute hand reaches the triangle or the top of the bezel, essentially wherever it is, that's when you're done diving or when you're at the desired depth of the dive, essentially.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, so that's kind of how it works. And you can kind of use it the opposite way where you just set the triangle at the top to wherever the minute hand is.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of track the minute hand and whatever it's pointing to is how many minutes it's been.
Yeah, same thing.
So it works both ways. But yeah, that's kind of cool. So that's the function of a dive watch bezel, which it looks cool as well.
I guess that makes sense why the modern ones only go in one direction, right? Because you don't want to make it seem like you have more time than you really do.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess like... And then obviously they have like a spring lock too. Mm-hmm. So the bezel doesn't move around after you set it.
Yeah. The old ones don't though. Like original Submariners and.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Vintage ones are bi-directional and they don't have a click spring. So.
Yeah. Not great for diving.
Yeah.
You bump a rock and you're just screwed.
Yeah. Then you have no idea how long you've been under. And then I guess another feature that's kind of cool that I've always thought is kind of cool is the helium escape valve that some of the really serious dive watches have, starting with the Sea Dweller. And that's kind of a cool technology. I think how it works is like basically the inside of the watch has helium in it. And like when you dive, the valve is kind of an automatic valve and it releases pressure based on the water pressure around it. So it's basically like pressurizing the watch to match the pressure, the water pressure outside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Or it fills back up with helium. Yeah. So it kind of goes both ways.
I wonder if it like puts out bubbles. It'd be kind of cool to see.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool. I don't know. I've never like seen one in action, but
yeah, I mean,
I guess that's the point. That's the point of the the helium escape valve, which is kind of cool. And you can actually see it on like the Sea Dweller and the Deep Sea.
Yeah.
It's like a little button on the side of the case.
Yeah, at 9 o'clock.
So yeah, at 9 o'clock. Yeah. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of the rundown on dive watches. Yeah. If you guys have any questions about dive watches, or you want to hear us cover another topic like this, we'll be doing other topics on like other complications of watches. So this is going to be kind of a mini series.
Yeah.
Is the plan.
A complicated history.
Yes, a complicated history. And this is the first one on dive watches. So we'll do more like this where we kind of talk about different complications on watches and their purpose. So yeah.
Cool. If you guys aren't already, go ahead and follow us on Instagram at Curtis Plus Richard and our podcast at Ticking Each Other Off. Check out what watches we have for sale. We're getting a dive watch in this week, a vintage Skin Diver, which is pretty cool. That's a whole nother topic, skin diving. That's curtisrichard.com. We also have a Facebook page at Curtis Plus Richard. And if you sign up for our mailing list on our site, you get early access to all of our watches and podcasts and everything. It's great.
Yep. Yeah. So definitely go sign up for our mailing list. You'll get early access to our inventory, and we'll let you know when that's coming out. So usually if we have new watches, we usually release them on Wednesdays, on the site, and then a day early for our email subscribers. So,
yep. So if you're listening to this podcast on the day it came out, there's new watches on our site right now.
Right, exactly. So yeah, make sure to check out our new inventory. Thanks for tuning in once again. And if you guys have any other topic ideas or questions or anything like that, just leave it below in the comments.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week on the next episode of Taking Each Other Out.